Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to our program. Today we are continuing our look at the 20 worst Americans. What history can teach us about overcoming the present. And I am Dave Balog. I'm the information officer for 1,000 Moms, building community support for LGBTQ youth in foster and adoptive care. And today we are going to take a look at the chapter from this book called Donald Trump 2, Enabling the Catastrophe COVID-19. Now, we have a lot of decisions to make in this country, and one of them has to be to never let Donald Trump near the White House again. I hear people talking about third-party candidates, especially I heard the former governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, just clueless in supporting a third party movement. It's just madness. We have to be foot soldiers for democracy. We were devastated in every possible way by Donald Trump for 4 years, and he has openly said that he will return as a dictator, as an authoritarian. And believe me, that is a disaster for this incompetent, this person of just total ineptitude and mean-spirited, reckless authoritarianism to ever, we need him just kicked off the stage, kicked off the American scene. And so we're going to review today the worst of Donald Trump. We can't even get to this because there's so much other reason to indict him and to lock him up. So let's begin. In the summer of 2005, President George W. Bush was on vacation at his ranch in Texas when he began flipping through a new book about the 1918 flu pandemic. He couldn't put it down. An aide remembers Bush telling her, he said, "Look, this happens every 100 years. We need a national strategy." Thus was born the nation's most comprehensive pandemic plan, a playbook that included diagrams for global early warning systems, funding, funding to develop new rapid vaccine technology, and a strong national stockpile of critical supplies, such as face masks and ventilators. Over the following months, Bush cabinet officials got behind the idea. Most of them had governed through September 11th, through the terror attacks, so events considered unlikely but highly impactful were very meaningful to them. In May 2006, the Bush White House issued a 227-page pandemic plan that described at length the necessary federal response, including as it relates to states and localities. Bush's remarks from 2005, years ago, still resonate. If we wait for a pandemic to appear, he warned, it will be too late to prepare. And one day many lives could be needlessly lost because we failed to act today. The last time the United States faced a worldwide pandemic, the Spanish flu of 1918 and 1919, cities slowed to a stop, theaters closed, and bars shuttered. Firemen, policemen, nurses, and other citizens covered their faces with gauze masks. As mentioned earlier, other wartime leaders recognized the threat diseases posed by infectious diseases. On July 4th, 1775, George Washington, newly appointed commander of the Continental Army, instituted a routine of social distancing to keep smallpox from spreading among his soldiers. There was a quarantined smallpox hospital near a pond near Cambridge, Massachusetts. Washington made the pond off limits. It was one of his first orders. Washington never lost sight of the threat epidemics posed to soldiers and civilians alike. The man who would become the first president urged his fellow founders to have the utmost vigilance against this most dangerous enemy. President Barack Obama expanded the Bush strategy to include a White House pandemic response team, disbanded this unit in May of 2018. It was his first botched response to COVID-19, and it wasn't even 2019. Shortly after, in July 2019, the epidemiologist embedded by the Centers for Disease Control and China's Disease Control Agency left the position. The Trump administration's response was to eliminate the position. The first person diagnosed with COVID-19 in the United States was identified on January 20th, 2020. 2 days later, Trump said, "We have it totally under control. It's one person coming in from China. It's going to be just fine." Trump's national security advisor warned him on January 28th that this will be the biggest national security threat you face in your presidency. Trump's trade advisor, Peter Navarro, then sent a memo to the president saying that the lack of an existing cure or vaccine would threaten the lives of millions of Americans. Trump pronounced on February 24th, quote, "The coronavirus is very much under control in the U.S. The stock market is starting to look good to me," end quote. Trade advisor Navarro was later assigned with procuring more supplies of the anti-malaria drug hydroxychloroquine. Trump believed without evidence that the drug would be a game changer. Critically, Trump and his administration never established any kind of effective testing and contact tracing program, a vital step in a pandemic to track and mitigate the spread of the virus. The Centers for Disease Control did create a testing kit, but it failed. The World Health Organization, WHO, had already delivered a successful testing kit to 57 countries by the end of February 2020. The United States government refused the WHO test, even as a temporary measure. An unnamed whistleblower named Jared Kushner's frat party personal protective equipment task force greatly diminished as an effective coronavirus response. cronyism also hurt. Task force members came from companies such as Google and Goldman Sachs. Kushner thought that their deal-making expertise would help find and distribute masks, gloves, ventilators, and other needed equipment. They found themselves dealing with a list of Donald Trump's cronies and Fox News stars demanding action for their personal institutions. For example, the task force sent 100,000 masks to a New York hospital after being repeatedly pushed by Fox News commentator Jeanine Pirro. The president's son-in-law was quoted as saying, "We'll MBA our way out of this." Tensions were high. Kushner yelled at a PPE task force member that he was failing, threw a pen at him, and shouted, "We'll all be dead by June." A White House insider complained that Kushner's group was underqualified, inexperienced, and botched efforts to stockpile personal production gear. State governors were on their own, sometimes competing with each other to get supplies flown in from other countries. Dr. Deborah Birx, the White House policy advisor, expressed unfounded confidence in Trump's response to the pandemic by revealing herself to be a Trump sycophant on Fox News early in the response. She glowed early on that Trump, probably from his extensive business background, could understand the granularity of the data and had a remark on the science. She later became a laughingstock by sitting silently by when Trump suggested the use of bleach injections and the shining of laser lights into the body as treatment. The first could kill you directly. The second could mutate your genes and kill you a little later. Just a little. Birx had the opportunity to respond to soften Trump's word bombs, and yet she sat silently in the White House press room, shuffling her papers, staring downward. By April 10, 2020, the U.S. had the highest number of COVID-19 cases and deaths of any nation, surpassing Italy and Spain. With critical hospital bed and ventilator shortages and exhausted doctors and nurses reusing masks or wearing plastic bags, aerial images of workers in hazmat suits burying coffins in mass graves on Hart Island, a New York City potter's grave, were shown. Private funeral parlors, particularly in the Bronx, turned their viewing rooms into makeshift morgues by raising the air conditioning to the highest levels. Trump continued to have super spreader events for his reelection campaign, including a notable one in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in early June. Herman Cain, a former presidential candidate, was in attendance, maskless. He got infected. Cain died within weeks. The whole nightmare scenario reached its nadir when Trump himself contracted COVID just weeks before the election, able to access the latest treatments not available to the general public, Trump recovered and made a wheezy, emperor-like return to the White House, defiantly ripping off his mask and sending a dangerous message to all Americans that you should just stand up to the virus that was ravaging the country and on its way to killing nearly a million citizens. His appearance in the White House was shocking, heartless, and confounding. Those in the Trump MAGA camp should consider this fact. Despite having only 4% of the world's population, the United States consistently accounted for 20% of cases and deaths from COVID-19. The administration's COVID-19 response begs for the scrutinization of nothing less than The Hague, the permanent home of the United Nations International Court of Justice. Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back and sum up the disaster of the Trump COVID response right after this break. Well, Trump and his COVID response is the topic of our podcast today. I'm Dave Balog for 1,000 Moms, and I am the author of The 20 Worst Americans, What History Can Teach Us About Overcoming the Present. And we'll tell you how to get a copy of this book or to start reading it for free if you hang on to the end of the program. Well, Trump was anti-science well before he reached the White House. He demonstrated a know-nothing approach. He did not know the importance of science to modern life, nor did he care. Vaccines and autism, climate change, the role of wind farms, and much more. The one program the Trump administration can take credit for is Operation Warp Speed. Launched in May 2020, Operation Warp Speed provided $10 billion in funding to support companies in the development, manufacturing, and distribution of a COVID-19 vaccine. The aim was to have initial doses ready by January 2021. But let there be no misunderstanding. Operation Warp Speed, OWS, did not create the vaccine for COVID-19. Generations of genetic research created an unprecedented new medical breakthrough, the mRNA vaccine. The science was ready. What Operation Warp Speed provided to companies such as Pfizer and Moderna was financial incentives for clinical trials, and it pre-purchased doses, providing a guaranteed market. That freed the companies to trim the time to shots in arms significantly. Chief scientist of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration said that the U.S. government deserves credit for the high priority given to Operation Warp Speed. Goodman called it a bright spot in the pandemic response. The rest of it was dismal. Even so, he said that getting Operation Warp Speed off the ground was done in anything but warp speed. It took months before the government got to investing in vaccines in earnest. This money should have started flowing in January, he said. If there hadn't been a persistent Trump indolence to wish the pandemic away. Well, this has been a selection from The Worst Americans, What History Can Teach Us About Overcoming the Present. And I put together this book because I believe we have to know our history. If we don't know our history, we're just going to repeat it. And this is, of course, recent history, but it just cannot be forgotten. And all of the efforts to investigate from the Mueller report to the January 6th committee to the current several investigations and indictments have not nailed this guy. He can and will run for president and theoretically if elected, run the government from a jail cell. It is madness. And we have to be the foot soldiers of democracy. So I urge you, take a look at our effort here, our book, to talk about what we need to know and how we need to be informed and how we need to register to vote. We are the only defense. The American voter, we are the only defense against this repeat that will surely finish democracy in the United States. Well, I want to recommend that folks start reading our book for free. There is a link in the description on this podcast show, but there is also a you can go on Amazon.com, search out my name, David Balog, B-A-L-O-G, and you will be directed to the book. And also, you can follow the link in the description of this podcast. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening. We will have other ongoing chapters from the book detailing how America met people who were literally, and how we coped with it. And I wrote it to encourage people to stay strong, to stay involved. Well, again, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.